gotten so scared. He tried to swear, but suddenly started crying, fighting to control himself, then sobbing all the more because he couldn't. I had seen Johnny take a whipping with a 2x4 from his old man and never let out a whimper. That made it worse to see him break now. Soda just held him and pushed Johnny's hair back out of his eyes. It's okay, Johnny Cake. They're gone now. It's okay. Finally, between sobs, Johnny managed to gasp out his story. He had been hunting our football to practice a few kicks when a blue Mustang had pulled up beside the lot. There were 4 Sochas in it. They had caught him, and one of them had a lot of rings on his hand. That's what had cut up Johnny so badly. It wasn't just that they had beaten him half to death. He could take that. They had scared him. They had threatened him with everything under the sun. Johnny was high-strung anyway, a nervous wreck from getting belted every time he turned around and from hearing his parents fight all the time. Living in those conditions might have turned someone else rebellious and bitter. It was killing Johnny. He had never been a coward. He was a good man in a rumble. He stuck up for the gang and kept his mouth shut good around cops. But after the night of the beating, Johnny was jumpier than ever. I didn't think he'd ever get over it. Johnny never walked by himself after that, and Johnny, who was the most law-abiding of us, now carried in his back pocket a 6-inch switchblade. He'd use it, too, if he ever got jumped again. They had scared him that much. He would kill the next person who jumped him. Nobody was ever going to beat him like that again. Not over his dead body. I had nearly forgotten that Cherry was listening to me, but when I came back to reality and looked at her, I was startled to find her as white as a sheet. All Sochas aren't like that, she said. You have to believe me, Pony Boy. Not all of us are like that. Sure, I said. That's like saying all you greasers are like Dallas Winston. I'll bet he's jumped a few people. I digested that. It was true. Dally had jumped people. He had told us stories about muggings in New York that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But not all of us were that bad. Cherry no longer looked sick, only sad. I'll bet you think the Sochas have it made. The rich kids, the West Side Sochas. I'll tell you something, Pony Boy, and it may come as a surprise. We have troubles you've never even heard of. You want to know something? She looked me straight in the eye. Things are rough all over. I believe you, I said. We'd better get back out there with the popcorn or Two-Bit'll think I ran off with his money. We went back and watched the movie through again. Marcia and Two-Bit were hitting it off fine. Both had the same scatterbrained sense of humor. But Cherry and Johnny and I just sat there looking at the movie and not talking. I quit worrying about everything and thought about how nice it was to sit with a girl without having to listen to her swear or to beat her off with a club. I knew Johnny liked it, too. He didn't talk to girls much. Once, while Dallas was in reform school, Sylvia had started hanging on to Johnny and sweet-talking him, and Steve got hold of her and told her if she tried any of her tricks with Johnny, he'd personally beat the tar out of her. Then he gave Johnny a lecture on girls and how a sneaking little broad like Sylvia would get him into a lot of trouble. As a result, Johnny never spoke to girls much. But whether that was because he was scared of Steve or because he was shy, I couldn't tell. I got the same lecture from Two-Bit after we'd picked up a couple of girls downtown one day. I thought it was funny because girls are one subject even Darry thinks I use my head about. And it really had been funny because Two-Bit was half crocked when he gave me the lecture and he told me some stories that about made me want to crawl under the floor or something. But he had been talking about girls like Sylvia and the girls he and Dally and the rest picked up at drive-ins and downtown. He never said anything about Sochi girls. So I figured it was all right to be sitting there with them, even if they did have their own troubles. I really couldn't see what Sochis would have to sweat about. Good grades, good cars, good girls, Madras and Mustangs and Corvairs. Man, I thought, if I had worries like that, I'd consider myself lucky. I know better now. Chapter 3. After the movie was over, it suddenly came to us that Cherry and Marcia didn't have a way to get home. Two-Bit gallantly offered to walk them home. The west side of town was only about 20 miles away, but they wanted to call their parents and have them come and get them. Two-Bit finally talked them into letting us drive them home in his car. I think they were still half scared of us. They were getting over it, though, as we walked to Two-Bit's house to pick up the car. It seemed funny to me that Socias, if these girls were any example, were just like us. They liked the Beatles and thought Elvis Presley was out, and we thought the Beatles were rank and that Elvis was tough. But that seemed the only difference to me. Of course, greasy girls would have acted a lot tougher, but there was a basic sameness. I thought maybe it was money that separated us. "No," Cherry said slowly when I said this. "It's not just money. Part of it is, but not all. You greasers have a different set of values. You're more emotional. We're sophisticated, cool to the point of not feeling anything. Nothing is for real with us. You know, sometimes I'll catch myself talking to a girlfriend and realize I don't mean half of what I'm saying. I don't really think a beer blast on the river bottom is super cool, but I'll rave about one to a girlfriend just to be saying something." She smiled at me. "I never told anyone that. I think you're the first person I've ever really gotten through to." She was coming through to me, all right. Probably because I was a greaser and younger. She didn't have to keep up her guard with me. "Rat race is a perfect name for it," she said. "We're always going and going and going and never asking where. Did you ever hear of having more than you wanted, so that you couldn't want anything else, and then started looking for something else to want? It seems like we're always searching for something to satisfy us and never finding it. Maybe if we could lose our cool, we could." That was the truth. Socias were always behind a wall of aloofness, careful not to let their real selves show through. I had seen a social club rumble once. The Socias even fought coldly and practically and impersonally. "That's why we're separated," I said. "It's not money, it's feeling. You don't feel anything, and we feel too violently." "And," she was trying to hide a smile, "that's probably why we take turns getting our names in the paper." Two-Bit and Marcia weren't even listening to us. They were engaged in some wild conversation that made no sense to anyone but themselves. I have quite a rep for being quiet, almost as quiet as Johnny. Two-Bit always said he wondered why Johnny and I were such good buddies. "You must make such interesting conversation," he'd say, cocking one eyebrow. "You keeping your mouth shut and Johnny not saying anything." But Johnny and I understood each other without saying anything. Nobody but Soda could really get me talking, till I met Cherry Valance. I don't know why I could talk to her. Maybe for the same reason she could talk to me. The first thing I knew, I was telling her about Mickey Mouse, Soda's horse. I had never told anyone about Soda's horse. It was personal. Soda had this buckskin horse, only it wasn't his. It belonged to a guy who kept it at the stables where Soda used to work. Mickey Mouse was Soda's horse, though. The first day Soda saw him, he said, "There's my horse," and I never doubted it. I was about 10 then. Soda Pop is horse crazy. I mean it. He's always hanging around stables and rodeos, hopping on a horse every time he gets a chance. When I was 10, I thought that Mickey Mouse and Soda looked alike and were alike. Mickey Mouse was a dark gold buckskin, sassy and ornery, not much more than a colt. He'd come when Soda called him. He wouldn't come for anyone else. That horse loved Soda. He'd stand there and chew on Soda's sleeve or collar. Gosh, but Soda Pop was crazy about that horse. He went down to see him every day. Mickey Mouse was a mean horse. He kicked other horses and was always getting into trouble. I got me an ornery pony, Soda'd tell him, rubbing his neck. How come you're so mean, Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse would just chew on his sleeve and sometimes nip him, but not hard. He may have belonged to another guy, but he was Soda's horse.
Does Soda still have him?
Cherry asked. He got sold, I said. They came and got him one day and took him off. He was a real valuable horse, pure quarter. She didn't say anything else, and I was glad. I couldn't tell her that Soda had bawled all night long after they came and got Mickey Mouse. I had cried, too, if you want to know the truth, because Soda never really wanted anything except a horse, and he'd lost his. Soda had been 12 then, going on 13. He never let on to Mom and Dad how he felt, though, because we never had enough money, and usually we had a hard time making ends meet. When you're 13 in our neighborhood, you know the score. I kept saving my money for a year, thinking that someday I could buy Mickey Mouse back for Soda. You're not so smart at 10.
You read a lot, don't you, Pony Boy?
Cherry asked.
I was startled.
Yeah, why? She kind of shrugged. I could just tell. I bet you watch sunsets, too.
She was quiet for a minute after I nodded.
I used to watch them, too, before I got so busy.
I pictured that, or tried to.
Maybe Cherry stood still and watched the sunset while she was supposed to be taking the garbage out.
Stood there and watched and forgot everything else until her big brother screamed at her to hurry up. I shook my head. It seemed funny to me that the sunset she saw from her patio and the one I saw from the back steps was the same one. Maybe the two different worlds we lived in weren't so different. We saw the same sunset.
Marcia suddenly gasped. Cherry, look what's coming.
We all looked and saw a blue Mustang coming down the street. Johnny made a small noise in his throat, and when I looked at him, he was white. Marcia was shifting nervously.
What are we going to do?
Cherry bit a fingernail.
Stand here, she said. There isn't much else we can do.
Who is it?
Two-Bit asked.
The FBI?
No, Cherry said bleakly. It's Randy and Bob.
And, Two-Bit added grimly, a few other of the socially elite checkered shirt set.
Your boyfriends? Johnny's voice was steady, but standing close to him as I was, I could see he was trembling. I wondered why. Johnny was a nervous wreck, but he never was that jumpy.
Cherry started walking down the street. Maybe they won't see us. Act normal.
Who's acting? Two-Bit grinned. I'm a natural normal.
Wish it was the other way around, I muttered, and Two-Bit said,
Don't get mouthy, Pony Boy.
The Mustang passed us slowly and went right on by. Marcia sighed in relief.
That was close.
Cherry turned to me.
Tell me about your oldest brother. You don't talk much about him.
I tried to think of something to say about Darry and shrugged.
What's to talk about? He's big and handsome and likes to play football.
I mean, what's he like? I feel like I know Soda from the way you talk about him. Tell me about Darry.
And when I was silent, she urged me on.
Is he wild and reckless like Soda? Dreamy like you?
My face got hot as I bit my lip.
Darry. What was Darry like?
I started to say he was a good old guy, but I couldn't. I burst out bitterly. He's not like Soda Pop at all, and he sure ain't like me. He's hard as a rock and about as human. He's got eyes exactly like frozen ice. He thinks I'm a pain in the neck. He likes Soda. Everybody likes Soda, but he can't stand me. I bet he wishes he could stick me in a home somewhere, and he'd do it, too, if Soda'd let him. Two-Bit and Johnny were staring at me now.
No, Two-Bit said, dumbfounded. No, Pony Boy, that ain't right. You got it wrong.
Gee, Johnny said softly, I thought you and Darry and Soda got along real well.
Well, we don't, I snapped, feeling silly. I knew my ears were red by the way they were burning, and I was thankful for the darkness. I felt stupid. Compared to Johnny's home, mine was heaven.
At least Derry didn't get drunk and beat me up or run out of the house, and I had Soda Pop to talk things over with. That made me mad. I mean, making a fool of myself in front of everyone. And you can shut your trap, Johnny Cade, 'cause we all know you ain't wanted at home either, and you can't blame them.
Johnny's eyes went round, and he winced as though I'd belted him. Two-Bit slapped me a good one across the side of the head, and hard.
Shut your mouth, kid. If you wasn't Soda's kid brother, I'd beat the tar out of you. You know better than to talk to Johnny like that.
He put his hand on Johnny's shoulder.
He didn't mean it, Johnny.
I'm sorry, I said miserably. Johnny was my buddy. I was just mad.
It's the truth, Johnny said with a bleak grin. I don't care.
Shut up talking like that,
Two-Bit said fiercely, messing up Johnny's hair.
We couldn't get along without you, so you can just shut up.
It ain't fair, I cried passionately. It ain't fair that we have all the rough breaks. I didn't know exactly what I meant, but I was thinking about Johnny's father being a drunk and his mother being a selfish slob and Two-Bit's mother being a barmaid to support him and his kid sister after their father ran out on them and Dally, wild, cunning Dally, turning into a hoodlum because he'd die if he didn't. And Steve, his hatred for his father coming out in his soft, bitter voice and the violence of his temper. Soda Pop, a dropout so he could get a job and keep me in school. And Derry, getting old before his time trying to run a family and hang on to two jobs and never having any fun, while the Socias had so much spare time and money that they jumped us and each other for kicks, had beer blasts and river bottom parties because they didn't know what else to do. Things were rough all over, all right. All over the East Side. It just didn't seem right to me.
I know, Two-Bit said with a good-natured grin. The chips are always down when it's our turn, but that's the way things are, like it or lump it.
Cherry and Marcia didn't say anything. I guess they didn't know what to say. We had forgotten they were there. Then the blue Mustang was coming down the street again, more slowly.
Well, Cherry said resignedly, they've spotted us.
The Mustang came to a halt beside us, and the two boys in the front seat got out. They were Socias, all right. One had on a white shirt and a Madras ski jacket, and the other a light yellow shirt and a wine-colored sweater. I looked at their clothes and realized for the first time that evening that all I had was a pair of jeans and Soda's old navy sweatshirt with the sleeves cut short. I swallowed. Two-Bit started to tuck in his shirt tail but stopped himself in time. He just flipped up the collar of his black leather jacket and lit a cigarette. The Socias didn't even seem to see us.
Cherry, Marcia, listen to us, the handsome black-haired Soch with the dark sweater began.
Johnny was breathing heavily, and I noticed he was staring at the Socia's hand. He was wearing three heavy rings. I looked quickly at Johnny, an idea dawning on me. I remembered that it was a blue Mustang that had pulled up beside the vacant lot, and that Johnny's face had been cut up by someone wearing rings. The Socia's voice broke into my thoughts.
Just because we got a little drunk last time.
Cherry looked mad.
A little? You call reeling and passing out in the streets a little? Bob, I told you, I'm never going out with you while you're drinking, and I mean it. Too many things could happen while you're drunk. It's me or the booze.
The other Soch, a tall guy with a semi-beetle haircut, turned to Marcia.
Baby, you know we don't get drunk very often.
When she only gave him a cold stare, he got angry.
And even if you are mad at us, that's no reason to go walk in the streets with these bums.
Two-Bit took a long drag on his cigarette. Johnny slouched and hooked his thumbs in his pockets, and I stiffened. We can look meaner than anything when we want to. Looking tough comes in handy. Two-Bit put his elbow on Johnny's shoulder.
Who you calling bums? Listen, greasers, we got four more of us in the back seat. Then pity the back seat,
Two-Bit said to the sky. If you're looking for a fight...
Two-Bit cocked an eyebrow, but it only made him look more cool.
You mean if I'm looking for a good jumping, you outnumber us so you'll give it to us? Well...
He snatched up an empty bottle, busted off the end, and gave it to me. Then reached in his back pocket and flipped out his switchblade.
Try it, pal.
No, Cherry cried. Stop it.
She looked at Bob. We'll ride home with you. Just wait a minute.
Why? Two-Bit demanded. We ain't scared of them.
Cherry shuddered.
I can't stand fights. I can't stand them.
I pulled her to one side. I couldn't use this, I said, dropping the pop bottle. I could never cut anyone. I had to tell her that, because I'd seen her eyes when Two-Bit flicked out his switch.
I know, she said quietly, but we better go with him. Pony boy, I mean, if I see you in the hall at school or someplace and don't say hi, well, it's not personal or anything, but...
I know, I said.
We couldn't let our parents see us with you all. You're a nice boy and everything.
It's okay, I said, wishing I was dead and buried somewhere, or at least that I had on a decent shirt. We aren't in the same class. Just don't forget that some of us watch the sunset, too. She looked at me quickly.
I could fall in love with Dallas Winston, she said. I hope I never see him again, or I will.
She left me standing there with my mouth dropped open, and the blue Mustang vroomed off. We walked on home, mostly in silence. I wanted to ask Johnny if those were the same Sosias that had beaten him up, but I didn't mention it. Johnny never talked about it, and we never said anything.
Well, those were two good-looking girls if I ever saw any,
Two-Bit yawned as we sat down on the curb at the vacant lot. He took a piece of paper out of his pocket and tore it up. What was that?
Marsh's number. Probably a phony one, too. I must have been out of my mind to ask for it. I think I'm a little soused.
So he had been drinking. Two-Bit was smart. He knew the score.
Y'all going home? He asked.
Not right now, I said. I wanted to have another smoke and to watch the stars. I had to be in by 12, but I thought I had plenty of time.
I don't know why I handed you that busted bottle, Two-Bit said, getting to his feet. You'd never use it.
Maybe I would have, I said. Where are you headed?
Gonna go play a little snooker and hunt up a poker game. Maybe get rip-roaring drunk. I don't know. See y'all tomorrow.
Johnny and I stretched out on our backs and looked at the stars. I was freezing. It was a cold night, and all I had was that sweatshirt. But I could watch stars in sub-zero weather. I saw Johnny's cigarette glowing in the dark and wondered vaguely what it was like inside a burning ember.
It was because we're greasers,
Johnny said, and I knew he was talking about Cherry.
We could have hurt her reputation.
I reckon, I said, wondering if I ought to tell Johnny what she had said about Dallas.
Man, that was a tough car. Mustangs are tough.
Big-time Sosia's all right, I said, a nervous bitterness growing inside me.
It wasn't fair for the Sosias to have everything.
We were as good as they were. It wasn't our fault we were greasers.
I couldn't just take it or leave it like Two-Bit, or ignore it and love life anyway like Soda Pop, or harden myself beyond caring like Dally, or actually enjoy it like Tim Shepard. I felt the tension growing inside of me, and I knew something had to happen or I would explode.
I can't take much more, Johnny spoke my own feelings. I'll kill myself or something.
Don't, I said, sitting up in alarm.
You can't kill yourself, Johnny. Well, I won't, but I gotta do something. It seems like there's gotta be some place without greasers or Sosias, with just people, plain, ordinary people.
Out of the big towns, I said, lying back down. In the country.
in the country. I love the country. I wanted to be out of towns and away from excitement. I only wanted to lie on my back under a tree and read a book or draw a picture, and not worry about being jumped or carrying a blade or ending up married to some scatterbrained broad with no sense. The country would be like that, I thought dreamily. I would have a yellow cur dog like I used to, and Soda Pop could get Mickey Mouse back and ride in all the rodeos he wanted to. And Darry would lose that cold, hard look and be like he used to be 8 months ago, before Mom and Dad were killed. Since I was dreaming, I brought Mom and Dad back to life. Mom could bake some more chocolate cakes, and Dad would drive the pickup out early to feed the cattle. He would slap Darry on the back and tell him he was getting to be a man, a regular chip off the block, and they would be as close as they used to be. Maybe Johnny could come and live with us, and the gang could come out on weekends. And maybe Dallas would see that there was some good in the world after all, and Mom would talk to him and make him grin in spite of himself. "You got quite a mom," Dally used to say. "She knows the score." She could talk to Dallas and kept him from getting into a lot of trouble. My mother was golden and beautiful. "Pony boy!" Johnny was shaking me. "Hey, Pony, wake up!" I sat up shivering. The stars had moved. "Glory, what time is it?" "I don't know. I went to sleep too, listening to you rattle on and on. You'd better get home. I think I'll stay all night out here." Johnny's parents didn't care if he came home or not. "Okay," I yawned. Gosh, but it was cold. "If you get cold or something, come on over to our house." "Okay." I ran home, trembling at the thought of facing Darry. The porch light was on. Maybe they were asleep and I could sneak in, I thought. I peeked in the window. Soda Pop was stretched out on the sofa, sound asleep, but Darry was in the armchair under the lamp reading the newspaper. I gulped and opened the door softly. Darry looked up from his paper. He was on his feet in a second. I stood there chewing on my fingernail. "Where the heck have you been? Do you know what time it is?" He was madder than I'd seen him in a long time. I shook my head wordlessly. "Well, it's 2 in the morning, kiddo. Another hour and I would have had the police out after you. Where were you, Pony boy?" His voice was rising. "Where in the almighty universe were you?" It sounded dumb even to me when I stammered, I went to sleep in the lot." "You what?" He was shouting, and Soda Pop sat up and rubbed his eyes. "Hey, Pony boy," he said sleepily. "Where you been?" "I didn't mean to," I pleaded with Darry. "I was talking to Johnny, and we both dropped off."
"I reckon it never occurred to you that your brothers might be worrying their heads off and afraid to call the police because something like that could get you two thrown in a boy some so quick it'd make your head spin. And you were asleep in the lot. Pony boy, what on earth is the matter with you? Can't you use your head? You haven't even got a coat on."
I felt hot tears of anger and frustration rising. "I said that I didn't mean to."
"I didn't mean to," Darry shouted, and I almost shook. "I didn't think. I forgot. That's all I hear out of you. Can't you think of anything?"
"Darry," Soda Pop began, but Darry turned on him.
"You keep your trap shut. I'm sick and tired of hearing you stick up for him."
He should never yell at Soda. Nobody should ever holler at my brother. I exploded.
"Don't you yell at him," I shouted. Darry wheeled around and slapped me so hard that it knocked me against the door.
Suddenly it was deathly quiet. We had all frozen. Nobody in my family had ever hit me. Nobody. Soda was wide-eyed. Darry looked at the palm of his hand where it had turned red, and then he looked back at me. His eyes were huge. "Pony boy." I turned and ran out the door and down the street as fast as I could. Darry screamed, "Pony, I didn't mean to—" But I was at the lot by then and pretended I couldn't hear. I was running away. It was plain to me that Darry didn't want me around, and I wouldn't stay if he did. He wasn't ever going to hit me again. "Johnny," I called, and started when he rolled over and jumped up almost under my feet. "Come on, Johnny, we're running away." Johnny asked no questions. We ran for several blocks until we were out of breath. Then we walked. I was crying by then.
I finally just sat down on the curb and cried, burying my face in my arms. Johnny sat down beside me, one hand on my shoulder.
"Easy, pony boy," he said softly. "We'll be okay."
I finally calmed down and wiped my eyes on my bare arm. My breath was coming in quivering sobs.
"Got a cigarette?"
He handed me one and struck a match.
"Johnny, I'm scared."
"Well, don't be. You're scaring me. What happened? I never seen you bawl like that."
"I don't very often. It was Derry. He hit me. I don't know what happened, but I couldn't take him hollering at me and hitting me, too. I don't know. Sometimes we get along okay, then all of a sudden he blows up on me, or else is nagging at me all the time. He didn't used to be like that. We used to get along okay before Mom and Dad died. Now he just can't stand me. I think I like it better when the old man's hitting me," Johnny sighed. "At least then I know he knows who I am. I walk in that house and nobody says anything. I walk out and nobody says anything. I stay away all night and nobody notices. At least you got soda. I ain't got nobody." "Shoot," I said, startled out of my misery. "You got the whole gang. Dally didn't slug you tonight because you're the pet. I mean, golly, Johnny, you got the whole gang."
"It ain't the same as having your own folks care about you," Johnny said simply. "It just ain't the same." I was beginning to relax and wonder if running away was such a great idea. I was sleepy and freezing to death, and I wanted to be home in bed, safe and warm under the covers, with Soda's arm across me. I decided I would go home and just not speak to Derry. It was my house as much as Derry's, and if he wanted to pretend I wasn't alive, that was just fine with me. He couldn't stop me from living in my own house. "Let's walk to the park and back. Then maybe I'll be cooled off enough to go home."
"Okay," Johnny said easily. "Okay." Things gotta get better, I figured. They couldn't get worse.
I was wrong. Chapter 4. The park was about 2 blocks square, with a fountain in the middle and a small swimming pool for the little kids. The pool was empty now in the fall, but the fountain was going merrily. Tall elm trees made the park shadowy and dark, and it would have been a good hangout, but we preferred our vacant lot, and the shepherd outfit liked the alleys down by the tracks, so the park was left to lovers and little kids. Nobody was around at 2:30 in the morning, and it was a good place to relax and cool off. I couldn't have gotten much cooler without turning into a popsicle. Johnny snapped up his jeans jacket and flipped up the collar.
"Ain't you about to freeze to death, pony?"
"You ain't a woofin'," I said, rubbing my bare arms between drags on my cigarette. I started to say something about the film of ice developing on the outer edges of the fountain when a sudden blast from a car horn made us both jump. The blue Mustang was circling the park slowly. Johnny swore under his breath, and I muttered,
"What do they want? This is our territory. What are Socias doing this far east?"
Johnny shook his head.
"I don't know, but I bet they're looking for us. We picked up their girls."
"Oh, glory," I said with a groan. "This is all I need to top off a perfect night." I took one last drag on my weed and ground the stub under my heel. "Want to run for it?"
"It's too late now," Johnny said.
"Here they come."
5 Socias were coming straight at us, and from the way they were staggering, I figured they were reeling pickled. That scared me. A cool, deadly bluff could sometimes shake them off, but not if they outnumbered you 5-2 and were drunk. Johnny's hand went to his back pocket, and I remembered his switchblade. I wished for that broken bottle. I'd sure show them I could use it if I had to. Johnny was scared to death. I mean it. He was as white as a ghost, and his eyes were wild-looking, like the eyes of an animal in a trap. We backed against the fountain, and the Socias surrounded us.
They smelled so heavily of whiskey and English leather that I almost choked. I wished desperately that Darry and Soda would come along hunting for me. The four of us could handle them easily, but no one was around, and I knew Johnny and I were going to have to fight it out alone. Johnny had a blank, tough look on his face. You'd have had to know him to see the panic in his eyes. I stared at the Socs coolly. Maybe they could scare us to death, but we'd never let them have the satisfaction of knowing it. It was Randy and Bob and three other Socs, and they recognized us. I knew Johnny recognized them. He was watching the moonlight glint off Bob's rings with huge eyes. "Hey, what do you know?" Bob said a little unsteadily. "Here's the little greasers that picked up our girls. Hey, greasers." "You're out of your territory," Johnny warned in a low voice. "You'd better watch it." Randy swore at us and they stepped in closer. Bob was eyeing Johnny. "Nup, pal, you're the ones who'd better watch it. Next time you want a broad, pick up your own kind. Dirt." I was getting mad. I was hating them enough to lose my head. "You know what a greaser is?" Bob asked. "White trash with long hair." I felt the blood draining from my face. I've been cussed out and sworn at, but nothing ever hit me like that did. Johnny Cake made a kind of gasp, and his eyes were smoldering. "You know what a soch is?" I said, my voice shaking with rage. "White trash with mustangs and madras." And then, because I couldn't think of anything bad enough to call them, I spit at them. Bob shook his head, smiling slowly. "You could use a bath, greaser, and a good working over, and we've got all night to do it. Give the kid a bath, David." I ducked and tried to run for it, but the Soch caught my arm and twisted it behind my back and shoved my face into the fountain. I fought, but the hand at the back of my neck was strong, and I had to hold my breath. "I'm dying," I thought, and I wondered what was happening to Johnny. I couldn't hold my breath any longer. I fought again, desperately, but only sucked in water. "I'm drowning," I thought. "They've gone too far." A red haze filled my mind, and I slowly relaxed. The next thing I knew, I was lying on the pavement beside the fountain, coughing water and gasping. I lay there weakly, breathing in air and spitting out water. The wind blasted through my soaked sweatshirt and dripping hair. My teeth chattered unceasingly, and I couldn't stop them. I finally pushed myself up and leaned back against the fountain, the water running down my face. Then I saw Johnny. He was sitting next to me, one elbow on his knee, and staring straight ahead. He was a strange greenish white, and his eyes were huger than I'd ever seen them. "I killed him," he said slowly. "I killed that boy." Bob, the handsome Soch, was lying there in the moonlight, doubled up and still. A dark pool was growing from him, spreading slowly over the blue-white cement. I looked at Johnny's hand. He was clutching his switchblade, and it was dark to the hilt. My stomach gave a violent jump, and my blood turned icy. "Johnny," I managed to say, fighting the dizziness, "I think I'm going to be sick." "Go ahead," he said in the same steady voice. "I won't look at you." I turned my head and was quietly sick for a minute. Then I leaned back and closed my eyes so I wouldn't see Bob lying there. "This can't be happening. This can't be happening. This can't be..." "You really killed him, huh, Johnny?"
"Yeah."
His voice quavered slightly.
"I had to. They were drowning you, Pony. They might have killed you. And they had a blade. They were going to beat me up."
"Like..." I swallowed. "Like they did before?" Johnny was quiet for a minute.
"Yeah," he said. "Like they did before."
Johnny told me what had happened. "They ran when I stabbed him. They all ran." A panic was rising in me as I listened to Johnny's quiet voice go on and on.
"Johnny," I nearly screamed, "what are we going to do? They put you in the electric chair for killing people."
I was shaking.
I want a cigarette. I want a cigarette. I want a cigarette. We had smoked our last pack. I'm scared, Johnny. What are we gonna do? Johnny jumped up and dragged me up by my sweatshirt. He shook me. Calm down, pony boy. Get a hold of yourself. I hadn't realized I was screaming. I shook loose. Okay, I said. I'm okay now. Johnny looked around, slapping his pockets nervously. We gotta get out of here. Get somewhere. Run away. The police'll be here soon. I was trembling, and it wasn't all from the cold. But Johnny, except for the fact that his hands were twitching, looked as cool as Darry ever had. We'll need money, and maybe a gun, and a plan. Money, maybe a gun, a plan. Where in the world would we get these things? Dally, Johnny said with finality. Dally'll get us out of here. I heaved a sigh. Why hadn't I thought of that? But I never thought of anything. Dallas Winston could do anything. Where can we find him? I think at Buck Merrill's place. There's a party over there tonight. Dally said something about it this afternoon.
Buck Merrill was Dally's rodeo partner. He was the one who'd got Dally the job as a jockey for the Slash J. Buck raised a few quarter horses and made most of his money on fixed races and a little bootlegging. I was under strict orders from both Darry and Soda not to get caught within 10 miles of his place, which was dandy with me. I didn't like Buck Merrill. He was a tall, lanky cowboy with blonde hair and buck teeth. Or he used to be buck-toothed before he had the front two knocked out in a fight. He was out of it. He dug Hank Williams. How gross can you get? Buck answered the door when we knocked, and a roar of cheap music came with him. The clinking of glasses, loud, rough laughter and female giggles, and Hank Williams. It scraped on my raw nerves like sandpaper. A can of beer in one hand, Buck glared down at us. What do you want?
Dally, Johnny gulped, looking back over his shoulder. We gotta see Dally.
He's busy,
Buck snapped, and someone in his living room yelled, ah-ha-ha, and then yee-haw, and the sound of it almost made my nerves snap. Tell him it's Pony and Johnny, I commanded. I knew Buck, and the only way you could get anything from him was to bully him. I guess that's why Dallas could handle him so easily, although Buck was in his mid-20s and Dally was 17. He'll come. Buck glared at me for a second, then stumbled off. He was pretty well crocked, which made me apprehensive. If Dally was drunk and in a dangerous mood, he appeared in a few minutes, clad only in a pair of low-cut blue jeans, scratching the hair on his chest. He was sober enough, and that surprised me. Maybe he hadn't been there long.
Okay, kids, what do you need me for?
As Johnny told him the story, I studied Dally, trying to figure out what there was about this tough-looking hood that a girl like Cherry Valance could love. Tow-headed and shifty-eyed, Dally was anything but handsome. Yet in his hard face there was character, pride, and a savage defiance of the world. He could never love Cherry Valance back. It would be a miracle if Dally loved anything. The fight for self-preservation had hardened him beyond caring. He didn't bat an eye when Johnny told him what had happened, only grinned and said, "Good for you," when Johnny told him how he had knifed the Soche. Finally, Johnny finished, "We figured you could get us out if anyone could. I'm sorry we got you away from the party."
"Aw, shoot, kid," Dally glanced contemptuously over his shoulder. "I was in the bedroom."
He suddenly stared at me.
"Glory, but your ears can get red, pony boy."
I was remembering what usually went on in the bedrooms at Buck's parties. Then Dally grinned in amused realization.
"It wasn't anything like that, kid. I was asleep or trying to be with all this racket."
Hank Williams. He rolled his eyes and added a few adjectives after Hank Williams.
"Me and Shepard had a run-in and I cracked some ribs. I just needed a place to lay over."
He rubbed his side ruefully.
"Old Tim sure can pack a punch. He won't be able to see out of one eye for a week."
He looked us over and sighed.
Well, wait a sec and I'll see what I can do about this mess.
Then he took a good look at me.
Pony boy, are you wet?
Yes, I stammered through chattering teeth.
Glory hallelujah.
He opened the screen door and pulled me in, motioning for Johnny to follow.
You'll die of pneumonia before the cops ever get you.
He half dragged me into an empty bedroom, swearing at me all the way.
Get that sweatshirt off.
He threw a towel at me.
Dry off and wait here. At least Johnny's got his jeans jacket. You ought to know better than to run away in just a sweatshirt and a wet one at that. Don't you ever use your head.
He sounded so much like Derry that I stared at him. He didn't notice and left us sitting on the bed. Johnny lay back on it. Wish I had me a weed. My knees were shaking as I finished drying off, sitting there in my jeans. Dally appeared after a minute. He carefully shut the door.
Here.
He handed us a gun and a roll of bills.
The gun's loaded. For Pete's sakes, Johnny, don't point the thing at me. Now here's $50. That's all I could get out of Merrill tonight. He's blowing his loot from that last race.
You might have thought it was Dally who fixed those races for Buck, being a jockey and all, but it wasn't. The last guy to suggest it lost 3 teeth. It's the truth. Dally rode the ponies honestly and did his best to win. It was the only thing Dally did honestly.
Pony, did Dary and Soda Pop know about this?
I shook my head. Dally sighed.
Boy, howdy. I ain't itching to be the one to tell Dary and get my head busted.
Then don't tell him, I said. I hated to worry Soda Pop and would have liked to let him know I had gotten this far okay, but I didn't care if Dary worried himself gray-headed. I was too tired to tell myself I was being mean and unreasonable. I convinced myself it wouldn't be fair to make Dally tell him. Dary would beat him to death for giving us money and the gun and getting us out of town.
Here.
Dally handed me a shirt about 60 million sizes too big.
It's Buck's. You and him ain't exactly the same size, but it's dry.
He handed me his worn brown leather jacket with the yellow sheep's wool lining.
It'll get cold where you're going, but you can't risk being loaded down with blankets.
I started buttoning up the shirt. It about swallowed me.
Hop the 3:15 freight to Windricksville,
Dally instructed. There's an old abandoned church on top of Jay Mountain. There's a pump in back, so don't worry about water. Buy a week's supply of food as soon as you get there, this morning, before the story gets out, and then don't so much as stick your noses out the door.
I'll be up there as soon as I think it's clear. Man, I thought New York was the only place I could get mixed up in a murder rap.
At the word murder, Johnny made a small noise in his throat and shuddered. Dally walked us back to the door, turning off the porch light before we stepped out.
Get going.
He messed up Johnny's hair.
Take care, kid, he said softly.
Sure, Dally. Thanks. And we ran into the darkness. We crouched in the weeds beside the railroad tracks, listening to the whistle grow louder. The train slowed to a screaming halt. Now, whispered Johnny. We ran and pulled ourselves into an open boxcar. We pressed against the side, trying to hold our breath while we listened to the railroad workers walk up and down outside. One poked his head inside, and we froze. But he didn't see us, and the boxcar rattled as the train started up. The first stop'll be Windricksville, Johnny said, laying down the gun gingerly. He shook his head. I don't see why he gave me this. I couldn't shoot anybody. Then, for the first time, really, I realized what we were in for. Johnny had killed someone. Quiet, soft-spoken little Johnny, who wouldn't hurt a living thing on purpose, had taken a human life. We were really running away, with the police after us for murder and a loaded gun by our side. I wished we'd asked Dally for a pack of cigarettes. I stretched out and used Johnny's legs for a pillow. Curling up, I was thankful for Dally's jacket. It was too big, but it was warm. Not even the rattling of the train could keep me awake, and I went to sleep in a hoodlum's jacket with a gun lying next to my hand. I was hardly awake when Johnny and I leaped off the train into a meadow.
Not until I landed in the dew and got a wet shock did I realize what I was doing. Johnny must have woke me up and told me to jump, but I didn't remember it. We lay in the tall weeds and damp grass, breathing heavily. The dawn was coming. It was lighting the sky in the east, and a ray of gold touched the hills. The clouds were pink and meadowlarks were singing. This is the country, I thought, half asleep. My dreams come true, and I'm in the country. Blast it, pony boy. Johnny was rubbing his legs. You must have put my legs to sleep. I can't even stand up. I barely got off that train. I'm sorry. Why didn't you wake me up? That's okay. I didn't want to wake you up until I had to. Now, how do we find Jay Mountain? I asked Johnny. I was still groggy with sleep and wanted to sleep forever right there in the dew and the dawn. Go ask someone. The story won't be in the paper yet. Make like a farm boy taking a walk or something. I don't look like a farm boy, I said. I suddenly thought of my long hair combed back and the slouching stride I use from habit. I looked at Johnny. He didn't look like any farm boy to me. He still reminded me of a lost puppy who had been kicked too often. But for the first time, I saw him as a stranger might see him. He looked hard and tough because of his black T-shirt and his blue jeans and jacket, and because his hair was heavily greased and so long. I saw how his hair curled behind his ears, and I thought, we both need a haircut and some decent clothes. I looked down at my worn, faded blue jeans, my too big shirt, and Dally's worn-out jacket. They'll know we're hoods the minute they see us, I thought. I'll have to stay here, Johnny said, rubbing his legs. You go down the road and ask the first person you see where Jay Mountain is. He winced at the pain in his legs. Then come back. And for Pete's sake, run a comb through your hair and quit slouching down like a thug. So Johnny had noticed it too. I pulled a comb from my back pocket and combed my hair carefully. I guess I look okay now, huh, Johnny? He was studying me. You know, you look an awful lot like Soda Pop, the way you've got your hair and everything. I mean, except your eyes are green. They ain't green, they're gray, I said, reddening. And I look about as much like Soda as you do. I got to my feet. He's good looking. Shoot, Johnny said with a grin. You are too. I climbed over the barbed wire fence without saying anything else. I could hear Johnny laughing at me, but I didn't care. I went strolling down the red dirt road, hoping my natural color would come back before I met anyone. I wonder what Darry and Soda Pop are doing now, I thought, yawning. Soda had the whole bed to himself for once. I bet Darry's sorry he ever hit me. He'll really get worried when he finds out Johnny and I killed that Soche. Then for a moment, I pictured Soda Pop's face when he heard about it. I wish I was home, I thought absently. I wish I was home and still in bed. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm just dreaming. It was only last night that Dally and I had sat down behind those girls at the nightly double. Glory, I thought with a bewildering feeling of being rushed. Things are happening too quick, too fast. I figured I couldn't get into any worse trouble than murder. Johnny and I would be hiding for the rest of our lives. Nobody but Dally would know where we were, and he couldn't tell anyone because he'd get jailed again for giving us that gun. If Johnny got caught, they'd send him to the electric chair, and if they caught me, I'd be sent to a reformatory. I'd heard about reformatories from Curly Shepherd, and I didn't want to go to one at all. So we'd have to be hermits for the rest of our lives, and we'd never see anyone but Dally. Maybe I'd never see Darry or Soda Pop again. Or even Two-Bit or Steve. I was in the country, but I knew I wasn't going to like it as much as I thought I would. There are things worse than being a greaser. I met a sunburned farmer driving a tractor down the road. I waved at him and he stopped. Could you tell me where Jay Mountain is? I asked as politely as I could. He pointed on down the road. Follow this road to that big hill over there. That's it. You taking a walk? Yes, sir, I managed to look sheepish.
We're playing Army, and I'm supposed to report to headquarters there. I can lie so easily that it spooks me sometimes. Soda says it comes from reading so much. But then, Two-Bit lies all the time, too, and he never opens a book.
Boys will be boys,
the farmer said with a grin, and I thought dully that he sounded as corn pony as Hank Williams. He went on, and I walked back to where Johnny was waiting. We climbed up the road to the church, although it was a lot farther away than it looked. The road got steeper with every step. I was feeling kind of drunk. I always do when I get too sleepy, and my legs got heavier and heavier. I guess Johnny was sleepier than I was. He had stayed awake on the train to make sure we got off at the right place. It took about 45 minutes to get there. We climbed in a back window. It was a small church, real old and spooky and spiderwebby. It gave me the creeps. I'd been in church before. I used to go all the time, even after Mom and Dad were gone. Then one Sunday, I talked Soda into coming with Johnny and me. He didn't want to come unless Steve did, and Two-Bit decided he might as well come too. Dally was sleeping off a hangover, and Darry was working. When Johnny and I went, we sat in the back, trying to get something out of the sermon and avoiding the people because we weren't dressed so sharp most of the time. Nobody seemed to mind, and Johnny and I really liked to go. But that day, well, Soda can't sit still long enough to enjoy a movie, much less a sermon. It wasn't long before he and Steve and Two-Bit were throwing paper wads at each other and clowning around. And finally, Steve dropped a hymn book with a bang. Accidentally, of course. Everyone in the place turned around to look at us, and Johnny and I nearly crawled under the pews. And then Two-Bit waved at them. I hadn't been to church since. But this church gave me a kind of creepy feeling. What do you call it? Premonition? I flopped down on the floor and immediately decided not to do any more flopping. That floor was stone and hard. Johnny stretched out beside me, resting his head on his arm. I started to say something to him, but I went to sleep before I could get the words out of my mouth. But Johnny didn't notice. He was asleep, too.
Chapter 5. I woke up late in the afternoon. For a second, I didn't know where I was. You know how it is when you wake up in a strange place and wonder where in the world you are until memory comes rushing over you like a wave. I half convinced myself that I had dreamed everything that had happened the night before. I'm really home in bed, I thought. It's late, and both Darry and Soda Pop are up. Darry's cooking breakfast, and in a minute he and Soda will come in and drag me out of bed and wrestle me down and tickle me until I think I'll die if they don't stop. It's me and Soda's turn to do the dishes after we eat, and then we'll all go outside and play football. Johnny and Two-Bit and I will get Darry on our side, since Johnny and I are so small and Darry's the best player. It'll go like the usual weekend morning. I tried telling myself that while I lay on the cold rock floor, wrapped up in Dally's jacket and listening to the wind rushing through the trees' dry leaves outside. Finally, I quit pretending and pushed myself up. I was stiff and sore from sleeping on that hard floor, but I had never slept so soundly. I was still groggy. I pushed off Johnny's jean jacket, which had somehow got thrown across me, and blinked, scratching my head. It was awful quiet, with just the sound of the rushing wind in the trees. Suddenly, I realized that Johnny wasn't there. "Johnny!" I called loudly, and that old wooden church echoed me. "Johnny, Johnny!" I looked around wildly, almost panic-stricken, but then caught sight of some crooked lettering written in the dust of the floor. "Went to get supplies. Be back soon. J.C." I sighed and went to the pump to get a drink. The water from it was like liquid ice, and it tasted funny, but it was water. I splashed some on my face, and that woke me up pretty quick. I wiped my face off on Johnny's jacket and sat down on the back steps. The hill the church was on dropped off suddenly about 20 feet from the back door, and you could see for miles and miles. It was like sitting on top of the world.
When you haven't got anything to do, you remember things in spite of yourself. I could remember every detail of the whole night, but it had the unreal quality of a dream. It seemed much longer than 24 hours since Johnny and I had met Dally at the corner of Pickett and Sutton. Maybe it was. Maybe Johnny had been gone a whole week and I had just slept. Maybe he had already been worked over by the